Hello, my name is Jason and welcome to DesignCast. It's a podcast where I interview a wide range of guests and ask the question, how do you design education? Why is this important? Students all learn differently and need varied teaching methods to be successful. It is more important now than ever to accommodate and personalize education for all students as much as possible. I use my 25 years of experience as an educator to ask questions and to learn about the exciting things people are doing to provide for all students and their unique perspectives. Each episode, I chat with guests from all over the world, from classroom teachers, authors, consultants, and beyond. We chat around a range of topics that we feel are important right now. Will you join me in this journey to learn and grow together? If it's your first time here, welcome. Thank you so much for taking the time to check it out. If you like this podcast, please leave a review, rate, subscribe, share, and download from your preferred podcasting app. This helps the podcast get discovered by new listeners. Also, please use the hashtag DesignCast when discussing your thoughts and feedback on your favorite social media platform. To connect with me, I would love to hear from you. Thanks for listening. So let's get on with the episode. Welcome back to another episode of DesignCast, and I am just absolutely just so excited to talk to AJ Crable today. AJ, how you doing, man?
Hey, having a wonderful day over here. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm absolutely just so excited to chat with you about all things students and all things what adults think students should do. But, you know, if you don't mind, can you maybe introduce yourself just a little bit and explain kind of what your current role in education is?
And again, thanks for having me in the conversation. Right now, the three different things that take up the majority of my time, one is being the conservator in DeSoto ISD. And really in that role, I'm supporting the leadership of the organization, really continuously improving the school district. We've had a great run, and I'm so proud of our students and teachers and the progress they've been making. I spend a significant amount of my time as a coach through the Council of Great City Schools, and in that capacity, again, working with school system leaders across the U.S. to really focus in on continuous improvement that's identifies student outcomes as its reason for being. And then finally, I'm working with a group of four high schools right now to deploy a student-led restorative practices framework so that when little AJ makes a suboptimal decision, you know, rather than using that as the occasion, you know, to put little AJ out of the school environment, are there ways that a group of students, that instead little AJ can be sent to a group of students and they can work through a restorative process that says, okay, what harm did you create? And how are we going to hold you accountable for actually repairing the harm that you've caused, the harm that you've created? And use this as a way of character building that pulls students back into the learning community rather than excommunicates them from it. And so those are three things that I'm working on right now. All of them get me fired up and excited about the difference we can make for students.
Wow. I think one of those would wear me out. So I can't imagine juggling three of those like that. Wow.
Chief's
that's something
trouble.
Else, man. I can only imagine. I don't know how you have enough time in the day to do it. But all of those are just unbelievable initiatives. And I think the one that I really am just super interested in has to do with this restorative justice, peer-on-peer type model. And so what's sort of inspired that? And how does that get rolled out into a school? I know it's slowly, but what kind of steps do you guys take to make that work?
Yeah, slowly is definitely the right answer. Originally, the district said, hey, can we do this in all of our high schools all at once in 1 year? And I was like, absolutely not, my friends. That what we're really going to need is we're going to need to start first with a coalition of the willing. Who are the school systems that really already hear a calling on their lives to be involved in this work? That we should build a pilot that describes your unique conditions and your unique part of the world. I mean, that means we should probably start small. And so open it up an application and let the high schools in the district all apply to see who's interested. And Right now, we've got four the high schools in the pilot, and we'll spend 2 years building this out with those four and creating a playbook, and then open up the door, ideally, for additional high schools to participate. The idea of this work essentially stems from the reality that I think most educators at some point stumbled across, that I just don't have enough time. Like, what really needs to happen right now is little AJ did something that none of us want him doing. And what I really would love to do is just sit down with him and break it down for him why this was a suboptimal decision. But then have a conversation. You know, what was on his mind at the time? Like, what was he processing through? What was he thinking about? And trying to help coach around habits of mind, help him engage in some metacognition around, okay, what were you thinking about in that moment? And what are you thinking now about what you were thinking about in that moment? Maybe engage in some empathy. As you're reflecting on this now, what impact are you seeing this having had for others? There's so much that I'd want to do in that moment to really help it be a learningful moment for little AJ to reflect and grow just as a person, as a contributor in our school. But I don't have the time. Like, if I had the time, that's what I would do. But the reality is I've got 27 other little AJs sitting back here. And so that's just not what's going to happen. So the recognition that a restorative approach to behavior challenges made sense, that part was pretty easy. And I think a lot of people's like, yeah, I could roll that, but who has the time for that? And then one day occurred to me, you know what? We are totally outnumbered in this building. Like, there are way more students running around this building. There are adults running around this building. Why aren't we tapping into the wisdom and the knowledge that's already in abundant supply, but just hasn't been deployed for this particular task? And that's where this idea of not merely restorative practices, not merely taking a restorative approach to addressing discipline challenges, but a student-led restorative approach to addressing discipline challenges.
I'm inspired, and I'm thinking about my own context and how that could, what I know it would have to look very different in every kind of context you could possibly imagine. But I'm also thinking about the end where the students who were being involved that aren't the ones who were little AJ, who are actually trying to help little AJ, the leadership and the empathy that you mentioned, those sorts of skills that they're learning on the job, in a sense, you know, they're getting real world experience doing. And I don't know, is that a deliberate thing or is that just a happy byproduct of the program as well?
Well, certainly we say that we want students to be ready for colleges and career and whatever adventure is next for them in life. Well, then that means we actually need to prepare them for that. And being able to work well with others seems to be a relevant skill. I don't think it makes sense to just assume that every student has exactly what they need in that area. And so when we see behavior challenges, to me, that's an indication that, you know, in this particular area, they're not ready to go out and be a great colleague and a great coworker and a great entrepreneur and a great student. And so I would just encourage us to treat it like any other subject in schools, that if little AJ takes a math quiz and completely bombs the math quiz, our resultant response isn't, well, let's just kick little AJ out of here for 3 days and figure out if, while sitting at home, little AJ masters algebra. Like, that's not our response when little AJ flunks the math quiz. Instead, our response, you know, the healthy, normal response is, you know, you do, in fact, have to hold little AJ accountable for the fact that they flunked the math quiz. That score is probably going into the book. But then we do some reflection. Okay, what'd you do that worked? What didn't work? We do some reteaching. Okay, now that we understand what gap there is, we reteach and, you know, we provide some additional instructional strategies and trying to figure out how did we not get that lesson learned. And then after little AJ's been leveled up in math a little bit, then we're going to give them another quiz, you know, see if they actually know this stuff. And so all I'm suggesting is that we consider that behavior isn't significantly differentiated from this approach in schools, is that when little AJ flunks the behavior quiz, then we certainly need to hold LSA accountable for the reality that plunked the behavior quiz, that they did in fact create harm, and they have to be accountable for that. And I think a critical part of training children to be really fully ready to be successful on their own terms in life is that you do have to understand that actions have consequences. And then when you make certain choices, you have to be accountable for that. I think that's an incredibly healthy expectation to have for children. I think it's an incredibly healthy expectation to have for adults. So part of being human is you make choices. Some days it works out the way you intend, some days it doesn't. And ultimately you should be accountable for that, whichever way it goes. And then whatever the next logical step is, take that. And so having those type of conversations and having that type of system in place in schools, to me, is incredibly consistent with the reason that we have schooling in the first place, to really position young people coming up to be wildly successful as they go into their life beyond school.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that with me. I'm really inspired listening to that and in reading sort of your website and learning about your work and then listening to this. I'm hearing a lot of student-centered language and a lot of student-centeredness. And I know you do a lot of work with higher-level people and groups in schools and in school districts and even, you know, school boards. And we were talking even before we started about how often as adults, because we're educated and went through school, we think we know what's best for students. And I'm wondering about the work that you do, bringing and educating the adults on what the partnership that should be education, you know, the partnership between students and making sure that we're not just imposing a one-way street, you know, on our students, but we're actually involving them in the process. So what sort of work do you do with that?
That is much the challenge. And so there's actual reason that while deploying student-led restorative practices, that actually start with training the adults first, is providing training for, and when I say the adults, I do mean all of them, all of the adults in a school building. And if you are an adult and you're in any way compensated to be in a school building, then I think you should be at the table. You should be part of the conversation of student-led restorative practices. This is something for all of us to be invested in, not just, well, the counselors should know about this. No, this really has to be a conversation that all of the adults in the building are part of. I was working with a principal once to deploy this work. She's like, so when you say everybody, who do you mean? I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, everybody. So you interpret that as you will. And so she's like, so you mean food service? Yeah. And are they human? Yes. Then absolutely, they should be part of this. Custodial? Yes. And so just every single person that's in the building. And the part of the reason for that is because this is a very different way for a lot of folks about thinking about how to address behavior than what schools are often doing. And so if we're going to have a shift in practice that is as significant as this, it's helpful to give the adults plenty of time to learn it, understand it, and begin to have an affinity for it before you even start training the students. Because my experience of working through this over time is that it's never been the students that have begun to make a student-led restorative practice initiative not work out. Invariably, what happens is adults find themselves deeply uncomfortable with it for some reason. Well, wait a minute, why are we putting authority? Shouldn't it be adults? You know, how can you trust children with this? And a lot of those type of conversations. And so taking the time to allow adults to be on their own learning journey, that actually, yeah, these are things that students can do. There's actually a lot of things that in a school system we could hand over to student wisdom and student decision-making if we were really open to it, that if we actually invest the time to provide students with a training, they could probably run the entire school, and there's very little that we couldn't ultimately turn over to them and that we'd learn something from having done so. But that idea of putting authority in the hands of students in an area as critical as behavior just seems really scary to a lot of folks. And so spending time working with all of the humans in the building, all the adults in the building, to get comfortable with what is it we're trying to accomplish here and why. What are some of the safeguards that keep this from going off the rails and whatever other things people might be worried about? And so that's a large part of the work up front is actually for student-led restorative practices. A large part of that upfront work is working with the adults and giving them a chance to really understand the work and embrace it before we roll it out.
The handing over of that power is scary. It can be messy. I think there's a fear of, if I do this, then will I be needed? You know, is that part of, do I need to come to work? You know, I think that's probably a little bit of the fear, but more than anything, there's the power part, right, of being able to feel that they have the experience and the wisdom to do that. So, AJ, that's great, man. I know we could talk all day about this. I want to hear about this book that you've just put out. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I often think of myself as just an old child. You know, working with young children versus old children or really old children, you know, to me, it's all humans. And so how do we set, you know, humans in a system up for success? Is, you know, really kind of what's at the core of my work in the variety of ways that I get to serve right now. I see a lot of kinship between the student-led restorative work I do and the work I do supporting and coaching school boards. And in both situations, we're trying to figure out how do we make more optimal decisions? And so this book is really a culmination of that journey that I've been on for quite some time now. And what happened was I started learning about governance when I joined the school board, and things were not working at all the way that any of us wanted it to work. And so it was either lean into the system that we have or really start over from scratch and create something new. And I'm fortunate that I served with just some really amazing folks who said, let's start over. Let's create something new entirely. And so we became students of governance, not anything any of us ran for the school board to do, but just recognizing that the current way of being of the school board just wasn't serving children. It certainly wasn't serving us. Like, no one was being served by this. And so we engaged in this multi-month process of learning everything we could about school boards and the process of redesigning our own. That worked out for our students. We made tremendous changes to how we govern, and in the years that followed, we saw tremendous improvements in student outcomes across literacy, numeracy, college career readiness, and so on and so forth. And as a result of that, people started calling saying, hey, we saw that you all did something. Is, you know, what can you come do for us? And can you help us understand the improvements you made? And so that's what began my journey of coaching other school boards as well. This book then is all about what did we learn? And after having coached dozens and dozens of school boards from across the country, a large, as small as 150 students, as large as over 300,000 students, and everywhere in between, and what are the key learnings? And what it really boils down to is that improvement in adult behavior in the boardroom actually has a lot in common with improvement in adult behavior in the classroom, is that you want to be on this continuous improvement journey. And so the book really describes what does a continuous improvement look like in the context of a school board, that it actually shares a lot with what continuous improvement looks like in the classroom, but there's some variations. And so this book tries to capture that. And so great on their behalf, why school boards fail and how yours can become effective. It really looks at what are some of the conditions that cause boards to stumble, and then what's a continuous improvement process that can really allow them to be great on behalf of the students they serve.
It sounds like that you guys had, thank you for sharing that with me. It sounds like there was a lot of courage and bravery that had to take place among you all to have that discussion, to start that, and to be, you know, to model lifelong learning habits that really is what we're expecting from our students, right? And so I think that's really great that you didn't stop didn't stop learning because you finished school, right?
Right. It's over. We're done here.
It's over. We're done. I'm done. I'm through learning, you know? So I think that's great that you guys do that. I'll make sure to include a link in the show notes to how to look at a copy of that. Yeah. And I can't wait to dig into it myself. And thank you for sharing that with me, AJ. I'm just really so stoked right now because I'm thinking about, I'm in a very different context than what you're in at the moment, but I do see a lot of similarities because schools are schools and they still run similarly, no matter where you are. It just depends on who they're answering to in a lot of ways. And so I'm just listening and I'm thinking about the kinds of things that I've seen go well and the lots of times the things I've seen not go so well. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a real inspiration to see that, you know, we've for years talked about how we need to improve education. But everyone thinks it's a big thing, right? That we start big and we have this big, but I believe truly, it sounds like you do too, that it starts at more of the granular level and then it just starts to infect and replicate in other places, in other ways. And wow, that's really amazing. I can't wait to read that and to find out about the journey you guys went on. Thank you for sharing that with me. And so, AJ, this is awesome, man. And I know you're a busy guy and I really appreciate the time that you've given me. I have one last question for you, and I've asked everyone this season the same question, and I can't wait to hear your answer. And that is, if you could travel back in time and tell your younger self anything, what would it be?
Yeah, probably be more aggressive, push harder for the things I believe in. As I replay the video on my journey, even though I always had good reasons for going slow and playing it safe, from this vantage point, it's hard to think of any area where the benefits I thought I would get from that were worth the cost. And so if I was going to advise myself, I'd probably, and that probably folks who've had to endure me probably thinking that sounds horrible, like, wait a minute, you'll be even more reckless than you were before. But honestly, that I probably... that while I certainly want to be inclusive and collaborative, that I think even inside of that approach, that there are ways I could have been more aggressive, I could have been more fearless, instead of being captivated by my fears or anxieties or worries, that I could have been more bold in my own voice and in my own practice. So I think that's the advice I'd give is, to be even more aggressive on behalf of the students you serve.
Wow. I love it, man. That's so deep. I've just found the topic for your next book, AJ, right there. Be fearless. I love it. And push harder.
Indeed.
All right. Listen, AJ, I really appreciate it. This has been an absolute joy and a pleasure, and I can't wait to collaborate and connect with you again really soon. I know you have a busy day ahead of you, and I do appreciate the time that you've given me, and I wish you all the best moving forward, and I know people will want to connect with you, so I'm going to share all your information that you shared with me on the show notes so that people can connect with you. So thank you so much for that.
All right, Jason, thank you for having me.
I hope that you enjoyed that episode of DesignCast. Again, I'm Jason. I am the creator and host and one-man band when it comes to this podcast. I sincerely hope you enjoyed it, and please share it with your colleagues and friends and help me network with those folks who you think will benefit from listening to this podcast. If you own a company or you have connections where you would like to partner with me in this podcast, whether it be sponsorship or product reviews or any other possible services, please reach out to me. My contact information is in the show notes, and I cannot wait to hear from you. I only do this because I love talking to people and I love sharing my passion with all the listeners. So if you are interested in possibly being a future guest, please reach out and get in touch. I can't wait to hear from you. I really want to hear about how this podcast and its guests are helping you become better or to enrich your lives. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, be good to one another.
Hello, Jason Reagan. Congratulations on your 100th episode of DesignCast. That is amazing. My friend, you have come a long way. I remember I was on way back episode 8, where we talked about drones with some other amazing people like Terry Linton. And then you also, I'm not sure why, but had me on episode 23, where I got to sing the praises of virtual reality, virtual worlds, and how it is helping us learn better. So keep pumping out some amazing episodes, my friend. I love your new pivot to not only looking at the design world, but how we design and personalize education.
Jason, I want to say congratulations on reaching your 100th episode. How amazing is that? Thank you for creating this space for all of us to come by and share a message with you. Education is now even more important than ever. And I want you to continue doing what you do, because a lot of us are relying on you and your expertise. So thank you. Congratulations. Felicidades. I'm so excited for you. Thanks for having me. This is Elaine, and I hope we connect soon.
Hi, Jason. It's Jarrett. It's always been great working with you as a colleague, either as a teacher or through Ivan Podcast. Has been great to see you face-to-face virtually, because we haven't been able to see each other for a couple of years now in person. So I think that's great that we can have that opportunity to talk with each other online. It's just fun just shooting the breeze with you. I really appreciate you having the DesignCast to talk best practices in the teaching world today. So all the best to you, and thanks again.
Hey, Jason, what an accomplishment and what a milestone. 100 episodes. That's amazing. That's 100 times you have gotten on the air and you have allowed your voice to be spoken and heard by so many that need it. We each have such unique individuality and style, and the way that we are designing our lives as educators and getting that word out to our students that they are valued and worthy and amazing. There's just nothing like it. So thanks.
Hey, it's Jonathan Nelda here from Stempunks. And listen, I had a fabulous time chatting with Jason on the podcast, and super excited to be able to celebrate 100 episodes. And I guess what I want to say is how unique and fantastic it is that Jason gives back so much to the design community. Obviously, he's teaching full time and handling all that, but he's also running the podcast. He's constantly sharing online tips and ideas and supporting everyone. So well deserved for the 100, and he's too many more, mate. Cheers.
Jason, Linda Keene here from Chicago, the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, and Milwaukee Next.cc Steam by Design. I think that your design cast is an amazing resource for design educators and educators all over the world. I have watched several of them, and I am reminded again that I have many more to watch. I love learning from other people and finding out what works with them and activating human imagination. It is more important now than ever before. And education has to share design of the built environment with the natural so that we can build a better world together. Thank you, Jason.
100 episodes? Wow, Jason. I'd celebrate this milestone by making you a giant pizza, and then I'd throw in for dessert some cinnamon rolls smothered in orange zest, cream cheese icing. I don't know why, but I'm suddenly hungry, just as I'm sure your many listeners are hungry for another 100 episodes from you. Jason, thanks so much for all your fascinating and informative podcasts. Please keep them coming.
Hi, Jason. This is Tamar. I'm very, very happy to hear that your design cast has completed its 100th podcast episode. And it's been a privilege being a part of this program. And listening to educators around the world from various locations and demographics helped us truly understand the challenges that they faced while teaching the same discipline that we teach. We were able to solve a lot of problems indeed, listening to their solutions. So keep doing this great work that you're doing. It shows that learning is absolutely effective in bringing in positive changes in an environment. And this is a real-time example that we are seeing through your episodes. All the very best to hit 1,000 episodes in the future. Would like to be a part of it sometime soon with updated knowledge and interesting stuff to share. So keep rocking. All the best.
Hey, Jason, it's Tony Ryan here from the Design and Technology Association in the UK. 100 episodes is blinding. I'm coming behind you with Design for Life, but I'm still 30 behind you, so a long, long way yet. Jason, congratulations. It's an amazing podcast. It gives me, it's on my must listen list, and it gives me a real international perspective, not just on design and technology, but on wider STEM education. And it does what you set out to do with it, which is to bring a community together who are united in one thing, and that's just helping young people to get the best education in this sector that they possibly can. So keep up the good work, my man, and I look forward to catching up soon. And congratulations, and here's to the next 100.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. We'll see you on the next episode.